Welcome to the Journey to Paid Speaking Gigs podcast. Here we bring on guests in the speaking world to uncover how to find your voice as a speaker, get paid speaking engagements, and develop your speaking skills. I'm your host, Charles Clark, mental health and resilience speaker. And today I'm talking with Selena Rezvani. She's an author, speaker, consultant who is committed to elevating women in leadership positions. We'll be discussing how she discovered the speaking world and tips for valuing yourself as a speaker. And if you like the topic we're covering today, check out the Journey to Paid Speaking Gigs Academy on my website at thecharlesclark.com/apply. thecharlesclark.com/apply. We are currently enrolling students into the academy. So if you know you are called to speak, go ahead and do yourself a favor. This is where you're going to learn everything that you need to know about creating a successful speaking business. All right. So let's invite Selena on to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Charles. I am excited to be here and for our conversation.
Yeah, you know, it's always cool to be able to connect with other speakers and just learn about your life. You know, I know how challenging it was and during the pandemic and transitioning out of that to still doing what we love doing, which is impacting people's lives. So, you know, before we get started, let the Thrive Tribe know just a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my mission is pretty simple, and that's really to elevate more women into leadership roles. You know, that has been something I've been working on for the last 12 years, and I do it a few ways. One of the biggest pieces is through public speaking. Yeah. So I do lots of leadership development trainings and presentations on self-advocacy, really standing up for yourself every day as a woman. And then the second way I work with organizations is doing more consulting, you know, so helping leaders create workplaces where women want to invest in long-term careers. Mm. And so when I'm not doing those things, I am a twin mama. I am a lover of cake. So I'm always baking a cake or looking for my next good slice of cake from somewhere. Yeah. I run too. You'll find me on runs.
Okay. All right. That's what's up.
Yeah.
how far you like to run? Are you a sprinter or are you a long distance runner? Which one?
Yeah, I'm more of a distance runner, actually. I'm like in 25 miles a week.
Oh, okay. You getting some rank in there. All right. Cool. So you talk a lot about pushback, right? As a leadership expert, the way I kind of thought about it was, you know, employees going against what you're trying to initiate and engage in, but your idea of it is a little different. Can you kind of explain on that and why that's necessary for people within the speaking industry, especially from a female's perspective?
Yeah, you know, I think pushback can conjure up these, like, sometimes negative images or images of conflict, right? Yeah. But I do see it more positively. I see it as articulating your needs, knowing when you're right, you know, backing yourself and taking a firm position on an issue. As speakers, we need to do this all the time, right? For our rates, to propose ourselves for a really exciting conference where maybe we weren't invited, but we want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many occasions we need to do this as speakers. So I think pushback is not a nice to have skill, but a must have. Skill.
Yeah.
You know, even when you get the gig, aren't you negotiating every little thing in that contract? Right. You know, in certain cases, well, you need to feel comfortable doing that. You need to practice and experiment at it.
So tell me a time when you had to really put it to the test. And maybe that's a daily way of living and creating that a part of your habit to really have the confidence that you need to exude that worth on the stage and to create more impact and income and as a speaker. Tell me a time where pushback was a big pivotal moment in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Charles? I am, and I'm guessing some of the people listening and joining us are recovering people pleasers. I certainly am.
Yeah.
And guess what? That made it very hard to say no. So I can still remember the first time I said no to a not good enough offer. You know, I say no to unpaid offers, but this was a paid offer that was not good enough. Mm-hmm. And there is tremendous liberation in that. I can still remember the client. I can still remember them trying to talk me out of my no and into a yes. Yeah. And holding firm on that no. And even though there's a part of me that felt like, oh, am I killing the relationship? Should I do this to be nice? All these pressures, staying in the no, like I said, backing myself, can't think of a more liberating thing than doing that for yourself.
And what did that like do like for you and your career and just this journey that we're all on, right? What did that do for you?
Time. It gave me time back, right? We all are working with the same amount of hours and minutes in a day, but you know this, Charles, as somebody in this field and seasoned, you could fill your entire week with like free requests that come at you of your time that are not necessarily going to have an ROI or a payoff. Sometimes they might, but you don't always know that. You could fill your weeks doing that. So I think it gives you back time to be choiceful and purposeful and clear on your value.
Yeah.
Really clear. It requires you to know your value like you know it, like you know it, like you know it.
Yeah.
You know, not be wishy-washy on it, because that's when people talk you out of your stance and into theirs.
Yeah. I think Martin Luther King said, if a man... What was the quote? He was saying, you know, if a man has not found something that he's willing to die for, he's not fit to live, right? And like that idea is like, what will you stand for in your life? Will you be tossed and turned when people tell you this and or that? Like, what will you stand for? I think a lot of times it's hard to get out of that, especially when you don't know who you are. You know, like one of my friends, he's having this really tough time to pivot, to charge more for his service. And he's not even in the speaking industry. But he's like, man, you know, I don't want to charge people too much. I'm like, you know, look at the demand that you have right now. Like you're getting requests like 10 times more than anyone else in your area. Like you should start charging more. You're just going to end up burning out. And so he's just at that level of saying, should I change my fee, you know, or should I continue to compromise the integrity of who I think I am and what I believe I'm worth?
I love that point you're making, because this can feel like such an ambiguous world. Like no one's ever going to hand you a number and say, this is your exact number. This is where you belong. You are setting these lines in the sand often for yourself. And let's be honest, you're ballparking, you know, making as educated and informed, you know, number as you can. But if we're really being honest about it, you know, nobody is going to hand you a finite definitive number. That's up to you to set. And so you better err on the side of valuing yourself versus undervaluing yourself. It's so important. And I like your point, because you're saying, look at some objective measures. Look at your demand. If demand is high, that's a metric right there. Another metric I like to look at is your scores, satisfaction scores. Look, if they're in the 90s, most likely you have room to go up and to be a little more aggressive in what you're asking for.
Yeah, test the water, you know, like it's 2021 at that, you know, and some people are still charging the same fees and that they were charging in 2010. And a lot has changed from that time. And I mean, you got to consider all those things. I want to go into your journey of how you got into speaking. Like, so kind of walk me through that journey. How did this all unfold in your life? I know you do consulting as well, but how did you start getting on that stage and impacting people's lives?
Charles, I got so lucky, because in my 20s, I had a consulting job as a management consultant. And in that role, my boss told me, here are your metrics for the year. Mm-hmm. One of your metrics is you have to speak at 4 conferences a year and represent our company.
That's fine.
So it could be in our region or it could be further, you know, afield, but you have to represent the company and you need to speak and pitch concepts. And I'm so grateful for that because it was scary as can be. It was so exciting too, to have some of these conferences accept speaking proposals.
Yeah.
And it was both of those things to actually get up on stage. So those were my training wheels. But I left my corporate life in 2009. I wrote my first book called The Next Generation of Women Leaders. And what I knew about speaking was that recognizable names help. So I started pitching myself to women in business groups. My book was about women's leadership, right? Mm-hmm. So at Harvard, at Princeton, at Duke, Carnegie Mellon. I can still remember going to all these places and colleges and speaking to women's groups. And, you know, they were so excited and hungry for this knowledge and incredibly welcoming and wonderful to me. And they said, you know, we'll give you testimonials. We'll happily, you know, help promote you and your book and your knowledge in any way we can. And that's really what allowed me to start pitching myself to businesses to say, I've done this over here. Look how I could, you know, make an impact for women at your company.
Yeah, proximity is power for sure. So like, when did you know this is actually something I'm gifted in? Like, I can spend my whole life or whatever time that I have right now doing this. When did you know, like, this is where I come alive and this is what's making a true impact in people's lives and my voice matters?
You know, I think it was incremental. I would love to tell you it was like a woke up one morning or on a certain stage it happened. But for me, it was incremental. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because I had so much self-doubt along the way. So for every win and victory and thrilling stage I was on,
yeah,
I had an equal amount of like terror that is this all going to go away? You know, imposter syndrome feelings of, do I belong on the stage? You know, am I worthy of this audience? You know, so I wish I could tell you it was just like that. But I think it was realizing, having people come up after you speak, having people write to you and say, I took X action.
Yeah.
Or I've been thinking and rolling around in my head that thought that you planted and it's leading to Y outcome. That's like what moves you. That's what thrills me and gives me a sense of purpose every day. So I think it was watching some of this, the stories, the information, like move the crowd.
Right.
That's what made me say, you know what? This is worth it. Mm-hmm. I am worth it. You know, and I'm going to stop discounting myself.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I noticed a big difference in the people who do it for the money and the people who do it because they truly care about people, right? And that answer goes in alignment with what you just said. It wasn't the reason that you knew, like, this, my voice matters because how much money you can make. Your voice matters, right? But because you realized the difference that it was making in people's lives, and you saw the testimonials, and you know, people were elated to hear from you and speak on that stage. Like, those are the things that I kind of validate as like, man, this is where I belong. This is where I come alive on that stage. And, you know, this is what truly matters to me. So yeah, thanks for sharing that part. I'm curious to know, like, for you, what size audience do you like to speak in? Like, is it large audience, intimate workshops? What's your type of vibe?
I love a big audience.
Yeah.
Like, I love to be in the, you know, like low thousands. The buzz and the sparkle in the room, like the kinetic energy, that's really hard to replicate. And it's a special thing. I like to do everything from like bodily exercises, you know, to interaction within the audience. So when you see a massive ballroom of people, you know, testing out, experimenting, laughing at some of the, you know, the funnier moments, there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they feel it too. There's something about being at scale like that, that adds some magic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on the same when it comes. I love speaking to large audiences. That's definitely where, like, I'm like, come on, like, this is like the Olympics right now to me.
Yes. Yes, exactly right.
Yeah. So what was the other question I was going to ask you? Okay, so here's my next question for you. Tell me about a time where your most memorable speech happened, and what happened when you were on that stage, or what happened at that event, and where were you?
Okay. So I'll tell you about a situation. I was going to speak to an audience I was not used to. So I'm not going to tell you the exact gig, but it was an audience that I felt very unfamiliar with in all kinds of ways. And frankly, felt foreign to me. And I wanted to connect with this audience, but I definitely had some fears, and I had equal excitement about, you know, getting to address this group and being on the stage. And I took a lot of time to prepare and to think about it and to research it. And I remember that night walking into the room, feeling very other, you know, feeling very different. Yeah, from yeah. 1,000 people in the room.
Yeah.
And nervous, you know, and I went up there at my time and I gave my remarks, and they seemed to be tracking with me. They were a little quiet as I went. You know, it's hard as a speaker. You're always trying to make sense of things like that and read the room. I finished my remarks, and it was the first time in my life I experienced a standing ovation. And it was such a crazy arc. If you had told me that's going to be the audience, you know, that you have like that kind of impact with, I would have never believed you. I just wouldn't. So,
yeah,
you know, there's some magic sometimes to taking on the real challenge, scary, whoa, this is way out of my comfort zone audience or gig, right? Sometimes they push you out of your zone with topic a little bit.
Yeah.
Or it's like I said, maybe it feels like the people in the room really speak their own vocabulary that like you're outside of and don't know. Sometimes the fruit of those opportunities are just awesome. And so I wouldn't trade that one for anything in the world, but it brought some new grit and confidence.
It's almost like a competition with yourself, right? Like, how can I do that again and again? Whatever that was, if people connected with it like this, I need to remember this feeling. I need to review and research and connect more with my content. I think that's so important for us to do. What are your thoughts on continued growth, especially with COVID happening and we have to make these different pivots in our business? What's your mindset? What's your mentality when it comes to, you know, constantly hitting that version of thrive in our life?
I love that question. Here's what I think. I think you can adapt to all the fanciest tech tools and, you know, pivot from a stage to Zoom and do all these technical things beautifully. Mm-hmm. I still don't think they hold a candle to you bringing your you-ness to that talk.
Yeah.
And I learned this the hard way and the long way, frankly. For a long time, I did not tell my own stories of struggle, triumph, you know, digging deep.
Yeah.
And I invalidated them, right? I told myself, and you've probably met a lot of speakers who've done this at some point in their journey, oh, that's too insignificant. That's not really a win worth sharing. Yeah. Or, you know, that's an embarrassing fail. I'm not sure I want to tell everyone about that, you know?
Yeah.
All these reasons you talk yourself out of it, and yet my goodness, that's when I started to connect with audiences. That's when I saw my training evaluations increase. When I started telling messy, ugly fails from my own life that were real, like when I blew it interviewing as a spokesperson, you know, for a really exciting opportunity.
Yeah.
But I also shared some of my fiercest wins, you know, things that made me who I am, bets I took on myself.
Yeah.
And boy, I wish I had done that sooner. So I think a huge part of growth and development is, no matter where COVID and post-COVID takes us, your best tool is still going to be to connect with people through your stories. Yeah. And you're never done that. So keep sharpening those, keep banking your stories, you know, and with new speakers, I like to tell them, you've got a central theme in your talk, or you've got several threads. Maybe it's about maintaining motivation. Maybe it's about getting sidelined and getting back up. You know, maybe it's about a time you said no, and, you know, how that freed you up or empowered you in some way. Nobody's walking around thinking, I have great, wonderful stories. But my advice to people would be is stop discounting them. I guarantee you have great stories. I guarantee it. Start testing them. Start seeing what people relate to, because you'll find they'll follow up with you at the end about that. They'll say, hey, how else did that pan out for you, Charles? What happened after you got the job? Or, you know, things like that. So that's your way to keep growing, in my opinion.
I truly believe that and support that. It's you know, and it's always a challenge, because being vulnerable and transparent, you're exposing yourself to people's opinions. But I think what allows us to gain our strength back is the confidence in how we deliver it. You know, is it from a place of brokenness, or is it from a place of, this is what happened to me, but look at where I am now, and look at how this has impacted my life for the better, right? Two different perspectives from that. One is victim mindset, and one is a guide mindset, right? And I'm always trying to, when I'm on that stage, I'm always trying to take people on some journey for themselves. Not not to say, you know, what was me? Like, no, it's this journey's for you, you know? And I think, yeah, we speakers definitely, we have that ability, you know, and we're given that platform so that other people can connect with us, right? They're not connecting to, like, so much of the information that you have, because we can get that in a book. They want to connect with the person on that stage, right? Because that's what allows us to create, like, this authenticity and a community of people alike.
Yes. And they want to know why you and this topic.
Yeah.
Why are you uniquely designed and built and experienced to talk on this? So you're really doing a disservice, like I did early in my speaking career, to leave that out, to discount it and not share it. That's what makes you memorable. That's what makes you interesting. You know, that's what you want to bottle. And you know, uniquely own. If you don't tell your story, somebody else is, you know, do you really want that? You know, sometimes they're going to tell the wrong story, or they're going to fill it in with missing, you know, half right information. You've got to author your own story. And I commend all people who have the bravery to get out there and share theirs, the good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah, that's the next layer, right? Like, And that takes a lot of inner work, you know, to get to that place. But, you know, tell that story, even if your voice shakes, as I say.
Yes. Beautiful.
Yeah. What would be someone that, a speaker you respect in the game, who would that person be? And what question would you ask that person?
You know, I would probably talk about Brené Brown, and, you know her work. So many people know her work. The way she shows up as 100% herself and kind of unapologetically her.
Yeah.
It is, I don't know if she realizes how liberating that is to other people. You know, so not just is she interesting to listen to and, you know, engaging and interesting and smart, she's also giving many other people permission just by her example to do the same. And I find that breathtaking about her. You know, I think I would ask her about that and say, if you could think of one thing that helped you stand in your power and authenticity and realness? Like, what was it? You know, if there's one thing that made a difference with that, because she's just such a shining example, I think, of doing that well. Wow. She's not there to conform.
Right.
And be a cookie cutter, something else, or yeah, to match everyone else in the room. She is 100% there as herself.
Yeah. You know, I what I'm thinking when I listen to Brené, it's like she takes research and it's like soul search. Like, now it's from this, like, this book idea and tons of information, but then she makes it hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to break. How can you break the monotony of, like, just giving people facts and, you know, these figures to, like, this is my life and this is how I'm incorporating and using these things? Like, she shares it so beautifully. Like,
I think so too. Yeah. And I think, you know, we and other speakers can do our own things with that. I think surprising the audience, which, you know, something you do. Yeah. Surprising the audience is great, like making a pivot and a change they're not seeing, or asking them to do something with their body. Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
You know, bringing color and unexpected references, yeah, you know, that aren't ho-hum business research, but that, whoa, I didn't expect you to illustrate it with an anecdote from there, right, from WWF or, you know, from some unexpected, yeah, thing. So I think we can add joy and spice and color to, yeah, so many things. And mm-hmm, I don't know about you, but I find that one of the fun creative challenges when right, you're, you know, doing up a new topic or, yeah, a new,
like,
talk.
It you know, kind of goes with your topic, like pushback. Like, that's the unexpected twist that you added to it. Like, because I'm thinking one thing and you're going to teach me a different concept of it. And so it's definitely utilizing those skills, but then also finding your it factor, right? What's the thing, yeah, that makes you different from everybody else on this subject? You know, like, that's the, mm-hmm, thing that's going to allow you to stand out and truly be memorable when you walk off that stage.
Yes. And you know what? One other thing that maybe this could help somebody, I feel like this was a hard won lesson and I would have loved to know it sooner, mm-hmm, is when you are designing, when you are coming up with the flow, think about some of the things that are going to energize you. I know that sounds self-centered, but it's going to ripple into the audience. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, if I'm injecting an exercise and I could make it serious or I could make it funny,
right?
Guess what? You know, hearing them laugh, I'm going to feed off that.
Yeah.
Then that's going to change my next move with them and what I do. So, you know, remembering too and noticing when you're on stage, what makes me feel good? Mm. There's a moment where I have people power pose with me and they follow my two poses. Well, guess what? It feels awesome too when I'm doing it.
Yep.
And it boosts performance, you know? So I think it's okay to sometimes say, what's going to lift my game? Mm. Not just what's going to feel interesting or surprising or delightful, yeah, to them.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Well said. You know, before we go, listen, where can the Thrive Tribe find you?
I hope you will find me and let me know your speaker struggles and wins, because I want to hear them. You can find me at selenarezvani.com. I'm going to spell it real quick. SelenaRezvani. And you can also find my courses on LinkedIn Learning. I teach all about confidence and advocating for yourself. So I hope you'll check those out. And find me on socials. You'll find me on all the social platforms under Selena Rezvani. And I'm excited to hear from you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining the Journey Pay Speaking Gigs podcast.
Yeah, thank you for doing this, Charles. I think it's so important in a field that can be very mysterious that you're demystifying what it takes to do this.
Yeah.
So thanks for your work.
All right, Tribe, I hope you found the conversation with Selena interesting. Let's recap. One, the idea of pushback is sometimes stigmatized, but the reality is it can be a great tool. Use it to advocate for yourself and set firm boundaries. Two, step out of your comfort zone.
Taking the step to speak for the first time or talk to an audience you're unfamiliar with can help you expand your skill set and lead to unexpected positive results. 3, bring you-ness to the table. Being vulnerable about your wins and losses helps you resonate with people on a deeper level. I hope you enjoyed the episode today. And if you're someone who is interested in speaking or just looking for tips on mindset and confidence, follow this podcast and be notified when other content is posted. You can also find me at The Charles Clark on all major social media platforms. I'll catch you guys on the next episode. Peace.